We're here with James Labrie of Dream Theater. James, it's great to have you here to do this interview for my show and for the Metal Command and for the fans out there. And James, what is Dream Theater doing right now? What do you guys have going on? And talk a little bit about what the band is up to at this point.
Well, right now, we're on a bit of a break. We got home just over a week ago from being over in Europe for 5.5 weeks. We were over there doing a lot of festivals, headlining a lot of the big festivals throughout Europe, and we were also doing, some headline shows here and there, going to places like Russia and Israel and stuff like that. But, so we did that, which was great because it was our first outing with Mike Mangini, our new drummer, so it basically really got the engine revved up and going, and everything felt amazing and very natural and very exciting. So we did that. Right now we're just taking a bit of a breather, and then starting September 24th, we begin the North American run in San Francisco. And we start there, and we go until throughout the States and Canada, and I think we're out until October 28th is our last show down in Texas. Yeah, but it's all good.
One of the things that I noticed, James, is that there's a much different vibe on this album, you know, as compared to maybe the last couple of releases. And, you know, I have to feel that that has something to do with Mike Mangini. And talk about recording this album, and talk about the recording of this new album, A Dramatic Turn of Events. And, you know, talk about what it was like to record this record with a new drummer and, you know, say as compared to other albums that you guys have recorded.
Well, I think that one of the main reasons I think that this album sounds fresh, and it sounds it's reconnecting with the elements that made Dream Theater first and foremost and initially very unique and very identifiable as a someone that had their own identity and their own styling and approach to composition as such. But I think too, Tony, you talked about, it feels fresh, it feels different. I think one of the things is when you have a dramatic situation occur as such, it makes you rethink many things. You are able to really reflect on who you are, what you've been, and what you want to be. And I think with that, we were able to take a very long and serious look at ourselves and really figure out what it is that we wanted to. We knew, there was no doubt in any one of our minds that we wanted to continue. And we knew that we weren't about to take an extended, indefinite hiatus. We all knew that, we still love doing what we're doing, and we're not about to break. And we still have a lot to say, still have a lot to prove, not only to ourselves, but to the world. It put us in a situation that would never have, if it hadn't happened as such, maybe we wouldn't have approached it as we did. There were people that we went into the studio with no drums, with no drummer, and we just came in and started to develop ideas. And cultivating them into actual sections in that. And, it's always, in that sense, a lot of it hasn't changed. A lot of the seeds and the ideas, it comes from writing instruments. And those writing instruments tend to always be the guitar or the piano and bass and such. And they just, those instruments lend themselves to writing tools. And so, once again, the ideas started to come forth through John Petrucci and Jordan, which has always been the situation. And even John Mayung, he stepped up to the plate more. I had some suggestions, some ideas, some riff ideas that I presented to the band. But I think this really kind of just put us in a completely different environment. It was an environment where we were able to really nakedly look at each riff, each each section of the song without, you know, presence and without the drums, you know, infusing. So it was really, it allowed an environment where it was much more patient, much more calm, much more availing itself to really letting the song slowly develop and unfold naturally. And I think because of that, we were able to scrutinize and really allow this album to present itself in a more breathing, relaxed atmosphere. And, you know, and then when we knew that we had something that was what we felt was definite, at that point, then the drums would be considered. And then it was actually drum programming that, that John Petrucci was doing on the computer. And then at that point, once we had everything said and done for a song with the drums being programmed, then we would funnel that to Mike Mangini. And at that point, he would take what was there, the ideas and everything that, as far as the percussion and everything else that was going on in the drum world, and he would develop it even further. He would take it and present to us, once he got into the studio, to start doing his tracks, what he heard or where he thought it needed to go. And it was pretty much, you know, a very strong communication between him and John Petrucci when the drum tracks were going down to really nail what we thought was necessary for the song. And knowing, too, I mean, quite obvious, that, to, you know, that this was something that was going to be scrutinized more than anything else. In the band, for various reasons, and for obvious reasons. So, you know, I think it was, I think a real blessing in disguise, because, like I said, we were really able to approach the situation, I think, much differently and much rejuvenated, more so than would have been the case, or would have ever have been the case, if things would have continued as they had, because it probably would have been just, you know, approaching it as we always did, and thinking, well, you know, it's worked before, why can't it work now? So, you know, we were able to really adjust things quite drastically, but still keeping it very natural and comfortable.
Now, you brought Mike Mangini into the band, James, and I have to say, as a fan, when I watched those videos, I just knew, before you announced it, I just knew he would be the guy. He just had a vibe about him, and the musical chemistry between you guys looked really good, seemed really great to me. And, you know, what was it about Mike that really made you guys want to say, hey, look, this is the guy we want to go on stage with, this is the guy we want to go out and do this with, and what was it about him that led you to inviting him into the band in the end after all the auditions were over?
As soon as we were done playing the first initial three songs with him, we knew that, you know, it was almost undeniable to really show everything, every ounce of himself. He was presenting it right to us, right then and there, showing us the enthusiasm, showing us just how badly he wanted it. And, but not only that, I mean, you know, Tony, I had recorded three solo albums with Mike, and I knew the kind of person he was, and I knew how focused he was, and just how incredibly phenomenal he is as a drummer. He's a real gem in the drummer world, and I mean, his reputation precedes him. But he just naturally, it just felt natural. It wasn't forced. It didn't feel like, oh, well, you know, this is okay, but it might take a little while, you know, to kind of feel out his style or his approach to, you know, his interpretation is just slightly different, but it's okay, maybe we can work on it. There wasn't anything like that going on. It was just, oh my God, you know, honestly, we all said to one another, following the audition, that we could have seriously done a show that night and felt completely natural in our environment, felt confident. Knew that we would go over and it would be a strong show. That's how just right it felt. Not to mention, I mean, he has the look, he has the charisma, just the whole chemistry was just so apparent. with him in the room, and the way that he gelled with us, just even doing songs, you know, the three songs from previous albums. But even when the whole jam sequence began, it was just, he just completely fell into it and flowed and was suggesting and was driving, you know, as far as where he wanted to take it and what he thought it needed as drums. And, you know, just his whole taste and his style, you know, it was just so apparent. You know, it was just, you know, once we were done with him and, you know, keeping an open mind, the other guys came in and they were phenomenal and they all were unique, you know, in their own way, in their own approach. But we just kept thinking about Mike each and every time. You know, once one of the other guys was done, we were like, yeah, the guy's amazing. There's no doubt about it, whether it was Marco Miniman, whether it was Peter Wildewer. You know, it was just something that we kept going back to Mike Mangini and saying, no, it's a natural fit. It just feels great. The guy's an absolute, you know, gem as a drummer and even as a person. He's just got a great attitude. He's very positive. He's very intelligent. And it just seemed like, you know, there's no fooling ourselves. This is our guy.
James, being in a music biz or any type of entertainment business, it's a very brutal business, and there is a lot of adversity and a lot of things you got to deal with that most normal people in their jobs don't deal with. And you guys have come through it, and you guys have been able to endure it for 20 years, over 20 years now. And James, talk about why has this band been able to stay together? What keeps you guys together, and what keeps you guys going?
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes we ask ourselves that too. I think, you know, there's five different personalities. However many members you have in a band, you know, there's no two people that are alike. Especially being in a creative environment, there tends to be tension, you know, and you're not going to agree on everything. So it's a matter of compromise. It's a matter of understanding. It's a matter of realizing and appreciating that you're all trying to put forth the best possible music or material that you can. So I think first and foremost, it's been the music, you know, that's really kept it together, because we've all been extremely proud of it and passionate towards that end, wanting it to be, you know, to continue, you know. The legacy of Dream Theater is much bigger than the parts, you know. And I think because of that, I think that's what's kept us going, realizing that, you know, we might not agree on everything, and we might have our moments of disagreement and displeasure, you know, at points. And that's like any relationship, and especially being in a band and being in a very highly intense situation at any given time, whether you're in the studio creating music, recording music, or you're out live in front of thousands of people. It's a situation that can be, if you don't look at it properly, you can lose perspective. And so I think, you know, it's been, for the most part, us really appreciating one another for who and what we are, and just, you know, realizing that, you know, we're not going to agree on everything, and just we're trying to maintain the goal and the direction as best we can, where we all feel comfortable with it. And, you know, I think that's basically what's helped to keep us together. I've always said, you know, that a rock band is a functional democracy. It is. That's the way it exists. That's the way I think it tends to exist. I think with this band, I think we, you know, we tend to, we've been able to maintain, so to speak, as much as we can, a democracy, you know, where we all feel that we're connected. And I think now, I think, you know, we started to lose sense of that over time, where, you know, everything became more or less coming from one outlet. And I think when it becomes like that, where you're giving too much responsibility to one person, unfortunately, I mean, as good as that might be for that one person and you know, all the power to them, it just, you lose sense of a unit. It doesn't become, you know, it's no longer united, and it's no longer connected with some of the parts. And I think that can be detrimental eventually. And yeah, and I think, you know, we did see some of that happening, and I think a lot of those points lead to what became our reality. And you know, whereas now we feel that everything is very positive, everything is very connected. Everything is, we made a point of making sure that our world as Dream Theater exists under transparency. You know, everything is very transparent, and we're all in on decisions, and we all have our various responsibilities within the band now, so that we can make sure that it stays, you know, productive and it stays strong, and we never lose focus of what we are as a band and what we're trying to attain musically, you know, as a band. So, going off on a tangent, but there you go.
Well, James, one of the things that I really impresses me in your resume is you worked with Ian Lucassen, who's one of my favorite musicians, and you sang on one of the Arion albums. And talk a little bit about what was it like to work with Ian? How did you like working with him? And talk a bit about the experience working with and singing on an Arion album.
Oh, man. Well, first and foremost, I mean, he's such a unique talent. You know, his music and his albums have really spoke loudly, you know, and he's very approachable. He's just a really beautiful human being. He's just an incredible, down-to-earth, very focused, very intelligent person, and he's very appreciative of what he has been able to do with his life, and that is to create great music and to work with wonderful people within the industry. And you can just see that, you know. He's just a really cool person. But at the same time, very focused. You know, I was really impressed with the way that he looks at music and the way that his whole vision in music. He's just very, very together. Very calm and very quiet to a certain extent. But, you know, in very few words, he's able to communicate exactly what it is that he wants from the people that he's working with, and what it is that he's trying to attain, what it is that he wants to convey vocally and through various instruments in the music. And it was just a real pleasure to work with him. He's just a great guy, a very, very cool guy, and very extremely talented.
I really liked your newest solo album, James. I think that you did take a different musical direction on this on your latest solo record. But, you know, the one thing I really liked about it was just the whole different style than what you've been doing for the past, say, 20 years. And talk a bit about that album. Why did you go into the musical direction that you did? And talk a bit about your newest solo album for those out there who really don't know about it yet.
Yeah, I mean, well, Matt and I, we had initially gotten together and we started talking about, okay, well, we came off of Elements of Persuasion and we did, you know, there was experimenting there and it was somewhat diverse. We touched into music that was almost, you would say, electronic or techno and then at the same time really heavy and then classic rock direction and stuff like that within that album and somewhat alternative. With this album, you know, I guess it was just where him and I were at that point, you know, listening to Seven Dust and System of a Down and In Flames and Tranquility, and we just kind of felt that, you know what, we need to make a really heavy, let's make a heavy album, but let's make it classic, and let's not do the typical thing and just make it, you know, bombastic and over the head and hitting you over the head with a sledgehammer. I said, you know, one of the things that we discussed is that, you know, as heavy as we want this album to be, we can take it wherever we want to take it, as long as the focus is on the melody within the music and the vocal melodies. And then also, you know, even taking it further, I mean, originally when we did the music, you know, we sit down and we write all the music together. I'm basically, it's as crazy as me sending him files, audio files of me, you know, doing da-da-da, you know, with ideas that keep popping into my head over a long period of time. and then him shooting me back, you know, where he would take stuff like that, and vice versa, him shooting me ideas and me getting back to him where I think it could go or what I'm also hearing with him, those ideas. We knew that this was something that, you know, with its melodic sense and with the power behind the songs, that it really had to be, you know, really well done, well written, and well presented. And originally, I was going to do all the screamo parts that Peter Wildewer ended up doing. I was going to do them more in the Awake kind of voice that I used during the Awake album. And then, actually, Matt came to me one day and he goes, "What do you think about taking it to the extreme end and, you know, and actually putting some thrash or screamo vocals around it?" And I was like, wow, you know, let me think about the parts, you know, and we were thinking about that being a part of the album. And then actually what I did is to come to the, to wanting that and concluding that, yeah, maybe that would be a great idea, as I looked at the voice, that screamo voice, you know, as being an instrument itself, and that I said to Matt, I said, no, this could actually add more dimension to the songs if I don't look at it as a voice and I look at it as an instrument, so that it's another expression, it's another form to the music that can bring it much more, can be much more profound, in a word. I said, maybe it could be very cool. And we didn't even have a drummer at that point. We were tossing around a couple drummers because Mike Mangini, I originally approached him to do it, but for he had too many obligations going on. He had a whole drum clinic going, tour going on. He was also still a professor at Berklee Music School. He just couldn't get the time to do it. So all of a sudden, Matt called me up and he said, "Have you heard of this guy, Peter Wildewer? You should check him out." And so we did. I did, and then I got back and I said, "Oh my God, first of all, he's a phenomenal drummer. I can't believe it, and that I haven't heard this guy." And then he said, "Well, you know, he's got an amazing screamo voice." Oh, well, and that's how that all came about. We heard him do some stuff, and I was blown away by his power and just how controlled it was, and if I may say so, just how musical it was, the way that he uses his voice. So that's how it all came about, basically, to end up, the finished thing ending up as it did, you know, the songs becoming what they were, and the those screamo vocals being a part of it, which I think really added a lot of excitement and a lot of dynamics to the album. And then to open up the album with the first voice that you hear is Peter's was great too. And I said, "Hey, let's do it." You know, it's the last thing people are thinking they're going to hear. They thought, you know, they're thinking it's going to be typical, where the first voice you're going to hear is obviously me. And I said, you know, let's blow their minds and hit them with a real heavy song. And the first voice they're going to hear is a screamo voice, which was really cool. You know, kind of like, here we go, man. You know, there's no rhyme or reason. You don't have to follow a formula. It's like whatever you think makes sense. And it worked out really well for us.
Nowadays, a lot of bands are mastering or remastering some of their older releases that were released on CD, but, you know, now with the technology the way it is, they can make them sound a lot better from the mastering perspective. And, James, do you guys plan on maybe reissuing maybe a couple of the older releases, say, like Images and Words or Awake?
You know, we briefly touched upon that subject, but, I mean, at this point, no, I don't think it's a priority. I think, it will come around. I think there's no doubt about it that it will. There will be a time that we think makes sense to go back in, and, you know, definitely with an album like Images and Words, because it was just, you know, just an undeniable album that really put us on the map, you know, internationally. And if there ever was an album to be remastered and brought up into the digital sonic world, then, you know, that one definitely needs it, and it would stand to be a collector's item, I think, you know, the reissue. But really, we haven't, you know, I don't think we're at the point where we're seriously discussing that at this point. So I think that, you know, I think that's a little ways down the road still.
Now, on a special edition of the previous release, Dream Theater's previous release, you played, on the third disc, you had a version of To Tame a Land by Iron Maiden. Just out of curiosity, why did you pick that song? It's kind of an obscure Maiden song, but still very good, and I found it interesting that you guys picked that as a Maiden track to cover.
You'd have to ask Mike Portnoy that, because he chose it.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't choose it, neither did any of the other guys in the band. It was Mike Portnoy who chose that. I mean, he was always a huge Dream Theater. He was always a huge Iron Maiden fan. So, you know, it was for obvious reasons to him, he chose that tune. You know, yeah, it was good. It was fun doing that. And you know, I mean, we've done several shows over the years with Iron Maiden, and you know, come to know them to a certain extent quite well. And
James, one of my favorite Dream Theater albums is Octavarium, and you know, it got a lot of mixed reviews, and I never understood why it got slammed and oppressed the way that it did, but I really liked that album quite a bit.
Oh, well, yeah, you got me. I mean, I absolutely love it.
So do I, and that's the thing, James, is that I really loved that album when it came out. It had some great songs on it, and then you guys did that classical recording where you had the score album, the live album, which had a lot of classical, had a whole orchestra behind you while you played, and I thought that sounded amazing. You know what I'm saying? And I really have to tell you, I thought that was great, and maybe touch a little bit about making Octavarium and talk about, you know, the orchestra that you guys played with for the live album score.
Yeah, well, I personally love it because I think that we touched on some incredible progressive moments, and I think that it really just kind of at that point in our career, it reaffirmed the kind of band that we are, and that we were, you know, still a band that, yeah, definitely our styles are eclectic. But I think that there was a lot of focus there, and there was a lot of unfolding of beautiful, progressive moments throughout the album. I mean, even the song, you know, the piece Octavarium itself is ridiculous. You know, a 42-minute song, and I just think that there were. I thought it was a melodically very powerful album as well. I think that we were all in a good headspace. At that point, I loved where I went vocally on that album. I just felt really connected to the songs, and it was just a really good time, you know, when we were in the studio and just the way that the songs were unfolding and the way that they were coming together. I just think it's a classic. I really do. I think, but that's okay because, you know, I still think Caress of Steel from Rush is an amazing album, but that album didn't get its due just, you know, from the critics. But it's still one of my favorite albums from Rush, and I think it's a great album. And but it doesn't always get perceived as such. And I think, you know, Octavarium was one of those albums. Although I do hear quite a few fans that, you know, I think they are, as time goes on, they reconnect with that album, and then they see something that they might not have initially heard. So it's interesting. It's almost like a slow developing monster, you know, for the band. But that's okay. And then the whole live thing. I mean, you know, that was just a real pinnacle moment in our career to be playing Radio City, which is just a monumental venue. Has incredible history in New York City with so many artists, so many amazing entertainers throughout history and throughout the last 100 years or so. But that whole night was just very magical. You know, to be on stage with an orchestra and just hearing the music with its interpretation, with the support of a more orchestral setting, which is kind of natural for a band like ours because we do have a lot of moments in our compositions that are very orchestrally driven. But it was just a great moment, you know, to to sell out Radio City and to have fans from, I think, from all over the world that just wanted to be a part of that evening and really celebrate the music and coming to that moment and knowing that it was going to be shot on DVD and stuff like that. It was just a really memorable evening that will always be, you know, a big moment in our career and that will hold dear to ourselves forever. There's no doubt about it. But it was great. Had a beautiful night that night.
James, you have had a very long and distinguished career, and over the course of your musical career, what are the top three highlights for you? What are three things that you look back in your career and you say, hey, look, these are the best three things that happened to me, and these are the top three things that I'm the most proud of during the course of my musical career?
First and foremost, I have to nod towards Images and Words. I mean, that was the first big highlight because it was the first official album that I'd done, but it was also an album that was hugely successful for us worldwide. And it just, like I said, you know, earlier, it really put us on the map, and I think it really solidified our career to have the opportunity to have longevity. And just the whole recognition as a vocalist, you know, at that point in my life was very cool, and it was very rewarding. And just to know that I did something with four other guys that would, I think, would live on in infinity as far as, you know, that kind of music, the progressive rock music genre. So I think that was definitely the one big moment. The second would be, I kind of felt that once again going into to Scenes from a Memory. To me, felt like we touched again upon some really magical moments with that album, and it was our first, you know, conceptual album. So, you know, it was the obvious evolution for a band such as ours. And I just thought that, you know, we really connected with the fans on that. So that would have been, you know, a really big highlight for me personally. And then I guess, you know, not to sound corny or so off, you know, typical or predictable, but, you know, right now, where things are right now with the band, it's incredible because it's almost like a throwback. It's a throwback to the times of innocence for us in the way that we felt during the Images and Words era, where we feel very connected as a band, where we feel extremely proud and excited with this new album. And we feel that it's probably, well, it is to us what we think is our favorite album and we think is our best material to date. And I know that's a big, bold statement, but we really, truly do feel that we've done something here that has really put us into a whole other level. And I think it wouldn't be as such if things didn't happen that have happened. But I think, you know, it's very positive, it's very connected. We just did a European tour, and we all said to one another, you know, I can't remember the last time I've had this much fun or I felt disconnected or this, you know, over the top of going on stage every night and really connecting with our fans and really feeling like a band out there and really being able to exude, you know, this connectedness and this positive vibe. And just, it's re-spirited. There's a whole new spirit going on in the band that I don't think we've felt for quite some time. So I think, you know, here's the best. I think I'm at the third highlight in my career right now, presently.
James, do you have any last words, anything to say to the fans out there, the Dream Theater fans that are going to be listening to this radio interview? It's going to go a little bit longer for my interview hour than it normally does, but you know, for the fans out there, you know, do you have any last words to say to them and anything you'd like to add to the interview and, you know, just kind of say what you want to the fans out there?
Well, I'm going to say, first and foremost, I want to thank everyone out there, you know, that continues to be a Dream Theater fan, that has been a Dream Theater fan over the years. Can't thank you enough. You know, I've said it, in live settings. I'll say it now. You know, you're keeping the dream alive, and we're really excited to connect once again with our fans. You know, definitely in Cleveland and throughout North America and throughout the rest of the world. But we can't thank you enough. You know, we never take this for granted. We appreciate our fans. We have the most incredible fans. I know every band says that, but I'm saying it for our band because it's true. It rings loud and clear to us that we have amazing fans, and they're dedicated. They've been with us all along, and I really hope that they love what they hear on this new album and that they can come out and spend an evening with us, wherever that may be, and have an amazing time with us and celebrate the continuation of our music.